This is Brock and Salk.
You want to go to the Seahawks game? All right, give me one more screen.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
I would put very little stock in what Brock Buehr has to say.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app.
Salk, the third time in 2 days, is flat out wrong.
And 710sports.com.
Good morning, everybody. It is Brock and Salk on 710 ESPN Seattle, 710sports.com, 710 Sports app. Glad to be back. Man, I missed you guys yesterday.
Feeling better, buddy?
Lying in bed sick. Oh, it was awful. Jeez, don't get what I had. Not fun.
Well, we shared a confined space for a lot of hours on Tuesday morning. So
I hope you don't end up with whatever I had.
No good. Because
it wasn't fun at all.
Well, I hope Pete doesn't. I hope nobody in that building does.
I'm actually feeling really bad about shaking Pete's hand.
That's right.
I know. I hope nothing bad happens to him. Geez, it was bad.
He's got that leaf-based
veggie diet. Plant-based turn?
Yeah.
Plant-based turn. Lots of quinoa, so don't worry.
He should be okay. Hey, I'm trying to make up for it with an incredibly positive take here. And it's something we started talking about this a little bit on Tuesday. I found myself thinking about it a lot yesterday, Brock, as I was in and out of consciousness. And this is kind of where I'm at. Do you remember when we were talking about... It's kind of during the baseball postseason this year. We were talking about what it was like covering a few championship teams.
And I thought that was more August when the Mariners were in the playoff run.
It wasn't then.
September. Was
no,
it?
No, it wasn't then.
It wasn't us waiting for that turn to happen with the Mariners? Like, now Robbie's back? I'm pretty sure it is,
it
Kyle.
It wasn't then.
Now, help me. I think this started, like, Robbie's going to come back. And what happens with teams when they get poised
runs? Not when we talked about it.
No, they have this hyper-focus.
Are you sure? Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
We're talking about the Red Sox and Astros and how that time of the year, those championship teams get a different vibe.
They just lock it in.
They just turn it on. They lock it in. Whatever cliche phrase you want to use for it, that's what they do. And I was around a couple of teams that did that. I mean, I was around the 2007 Red Sox. They did that. That just something happened near the end of that year where they just sort of became close to perfect. I don't know how else to explain it, but these teams just get a completely different vibe around them, and their attitude changes. It happened with them. It happened with the 2013 Red Sox, who I was around. It happened with the 2013 Bruins, who made it to the Stanley Cup and lost in six games. And I've heard people, and I've talked to other reporters who have covered other teams. Something just seems to happen with those teams where all of a sudden – They just turn into a completely different locked-in group. And I don't know whether it's confidence. I don't know if it's chemistry. I don't know what the word is you want to use. It's the exact opposite of this year's Mariners team.
Mm-hmm.
It's the exact opposite of what happened to that team down the stretch, where all of a sudden they just flip a switch and they're different. And that's what I think happened to the Seahawks on Monday night.
It was in September. It was absolutely in September. We actually had Joe Buck on at a similar time as you were making that point. And I remember asking Joe about something he wrote in his book of the 2013 Seahawks, of when he sat with them before the Super Bowl, and he's like, they were so locked in that I called my wife and said, this isn't going to be a game. That just sitting with the Legion of Boom at that time and just watching those guys, that there was just exactly to what you just said, just a vibe, a confidence, a locked in.
Something changes.
Yes, that they are just not going to lose.
And I felt like Monday night was that switch being flipped for this team.
Ooh, I hope so.
And I felt like in watching them, they went from a team, Brock, that was surprised by its own success to one that believes it's as good as anyone else out there. I think this team expects to go to the Super Bowl. And I don't know if they're going to get there, okay? There is a huge gulf between having enough talent to get there and believing you can be there. I don't know whether they have enough talent. I don't know whether they're as good as the Saints and Rams. I don't know whether they can actually handle going on the road three times to get to a Super Bowl. That's a really big challenge for anyone. And there's a reason most wildcard teams don't end up making the Super Bowl. But I think they actually believe it. And if you saw the swagger, if you were at the game, you had to see the swagger for yourself. I don't know whether you could fully appreciate it on TV. I know they showed some of it. If you didn't see Bradley McDougal and Justin Coleman and Frank Clark and Bobby Wagner and the rest of those guys and the way they were behaving.
I think I got my swagger back.
They did. If you didn't see the way they were behaving during the game, I don't know that you could
fully
tell. Was
that Lockett? Was that Lockett there?
That was Noe right there.
I think I got my swagger back.
I'll tell you, man.
That's high school dude in Detroit. That's some of the greatest sound ever. Lydia, you were at the game. You were sitting up in the press box. Did you feel what Salk's talking about?
Yeah, it was like the but of course, Salk will hate this comparison since it's a Gladiator reference, but I was like, he's like Maximus in the Gladiator right now. Frank Clark was like leading the entire south end zone. Like this was his show.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt defensively, Salk. You're right. It almost felt like the inverse offensively, especially in that second half, that they lost some of that confidence. That really after that pick by Russ at the end of the first half, it was almost just a, hey, man, we're not going to screw this up for this defense.
Yeah, for the game. But I didn't get the sense that offense now like doesn't believe in itself or anything. Chris Carson powering into the end zone, Russell with his big run. I felt like this defense, and this team always was going to feed off its defense and the way it plays.
You do at home.
I got the sense that they changed their belief. And the last few seasons, they were trying to fake it. Come on, we were all trying to fake it. Can't we just admit this? Can't we admit we've been trying to fake this for the last few years until now? Can't we admit that together as a fan base?
I've never faked it.
How many times you heard Brock say he don't fake the funk?
Well, I've heard him say it. Doesn't make it true.
I wasn't the one trying to play AC/DC.
You absolutely were, and I had to end the AC/DC because it was fake. Because it was phony. It didn't have the same authenticity. And when they would play these haters can't hold us back, and Michael Bennett would be out, like it felt phony the last couple of years, and you know it. And if you were at the games, you knew that it felt phony. It wasn't authentic. Monday night felt authentic.
Yeah. What did Wassel think that song said? These haters can't.
I don't know. Oh, I forget. That's a great one.
That was a really, really good
DA,
one.
The DA can't hold us back.
DA can't hold me back.
These haters can't hold me back.
These haters?
No, the DA.
It's the DA who can't hold you back.
DA can't hold me back. DA can't hold me back.
So you're right.
It felt fake.
We were all kind of faking it,
especially
not really understanding
Wassel.
It.
There's nothing. DA can't hold me back.
There's nothing worse than faking it, man. And for the last few years, they were faking it. And they're not. I don't think they're faking it anymore. And I know it's hard for a lot of people to say that. And I know there's people who want to defend where the Seahawks were at. No, they were a couple of kicks away from 10-6 or 11-5. Yeah, whatever, man. They were faking it. Mm. They were faking the fact that they were still together. They were faking the fact because they still wanted to be great. They were faking it because they still wanted to have one last moment of being the LOB and this team and this dynasty. And it ended on them, and they weren't willing to admit it.
I'll give you hard, fast, like concrete info on that. When Bobby and Earl are fighting and you get your name out my mouth, that was really all we need to know. They just were not. It was the antithesis of everything you just said, just like that Mariners team that just started to fight in the clubhouse. It was totally broken, and it was done. Now, you asked Pete about this. I'm curious to hear kind of 2 days later his answer, because you asked him very specifically, hey, did this thing come together in this kind of vein on Monday night?
I hope so. It's really important going down a stretch here. It's been coming, and I know that the Vikings have been frustrated too, and there was a lot of yapping going on last night, just in general, you know, across back and forth, and that's a good, healthy, prideful group of guys over there, you know, and they're tough, and they've been through a lot of great success and all that, and they're a little frustrated, and our guys just kind of on that edge too, so maybe that's what you saw, but I think our guys felt really good about what was going on, and they just built in the crescendo and gave us a real good night.
He used that word a few times, crescendo, on Tuesday, and I don't. Yeah. It had that feel to it, man, and I think he's right. You do have to have that. You have to get locked in on like that or late in the year. It doesn't have to be like that early. In fact, you can make an argument you don't want it early. You want to sort of develop as a team and start to coalesce and come together late in the season like this, and I think this team had no expectations for itself. We certainly didn't have outside expectations for them, and I don't think they really had any grand expectations for themselves other than, hey, let's go out and see what happens.
Don't tell Bobby that. Bobby, very clear this week that you all on the outside didn't know what we had.
From everything I've heard from people who know people on the inside, they didn't have that kind of belief system yet either, and that's okay. They can play the outsiders didn't believe, that's fine, but I don't know, and maybe Bobby always believed, but I'm sure that there's a group of people in that locker room that were like, hey, can you believe we're doing this? Can you believe this group's going out there doing no Richard Sherman, no Michael Bennett, no Jimmy Graham, on and on and on, no Earl Thomas, no Cam Chancellor, no Cliff Avery. Look what we're doing.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden they're going, no, this is real. This is who we are. This is a team that is ready to start winning playoff games, and they got to win one more here down the stretch, and then you're off and running. Yeah, I'll take my chances.
Bobby and Russ may have very well had that belief, and they should have after 7 years in this league of being Pro Bowlers and some of the very best to play and win championships. But to expect Trey Flowers and Shaq and these guys that have never been through it, that have no idea, to do it week in and week out, and now to win 4 in a row, to win 8 of your last 11, I think they are, what was Pete's word? Crescending?
What is it? Well, it's definitely not that.
Well, there's descending.
Reaching a crescendo?
There's a crescendo.
Ascending?
There you go. That's exactly what they're doing right now.
Word, but doesn't really know what it means.
Crescending?
Not a word. 7:10, time for Need to Know.
need to know. The voice of Seattle sports.
Brought to you by VenueKings.com.
Here's what you need to know up first.
Oh, man, after all the good news here and the Seahawks flipping their switch, let's just mention one piece of negative news. Seahawks linebacker Michael Kendricks out for the year after he suffered a broken tibia against the Vikings on Monday night. That's bad news, man. Guy's only played in a couple of games, so he's been a difference maker. There's a reason their defense looked as good as it did on Monday night, and it's not just everyone else around him. He came back and actually, I thought, propelled them to an even higher height, a greater height. He's a good player, and you can hear it every single time Pete Carroll talks about him. He really likes Michael Kendricks, likes the way he plays the game, and what a tough dude out there despite the broken leg. And they're going to be done for the year. Hopefully KJ Wright is able to get back at some point.
Bro, that happened early. Pete telling us, and you asked for a few more of the heroes on Tuesdays. We sat down with Pete, and that was the name he mentioned and kind of broke some of that news that he had gotten hurt. I don't think they knew the extent of it. He goes in for an MRI Tuesday, and they find that some bone in the tibia is off of his knee. Pete called it a knee surgery yesterday that he went in for surgery. That guy played over 40 snaps in the game.
So why doesn't he keep playing?
Because I think the pain after the adrenaline and everything, and even not being able to play at full speed.
You can't just shoot him up for that?
No, okay. It's going to be a 6 to 8 week return, but it is quite a statement of that guy's football character, why Pete loves him, why he's been a difference maker in this league, and we'll see what happens here in the month of January with all of his legal proceedings. I really hope that guy is in the fold long term in Seattle.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Winter meetings continuing in Las Vegas. Mariners manager Scott Servais met with the media yesterday and said he expects Mitch Haniger to be wearing a Mariners uniform, quote, for a while. Not really sure what Scott Servais's opinion on that means, to be perfectly honest. Yes, of course, he wants Mitch Haniger wearing a Mariners uniform because he wants to win as many games as possible in the meantime. But I think what's really going to determine that is the long-term value of Mitch Haniger and what they're offered. And if teams really want to continue to bring them offers, as Jerry DePoto said, he's willing to be blown away. Well, no one's blown him away yet. And if somebody does, in all likelihood, he'll trade Mitch Haniger. Should he? Again, it just depends on the offer. I think there's some value to keeping around one guy to kind of be your leader moving forward, especially someone like Haniger. They love the way he plays the game. They love the way he prepares. I think they would like him to be a mentor for some of the younger players that they're bringing in. I think one of the challenges they're going to have in the next year or so is how do you keep this from being a waste station? And it's one of the things you hear in baseball about AAA. AAA can be a bad place. It's the reason a lot of prospects go right from AA, because in AAA, you find a lot of ex-major leaguers who are bitter that they're not back in the game and a bunch of career minor leaguers who have never made it. And that can be a really uncomfortable mix. Who do you expect to be the remaining free agents brought in here in Seattle? Are they guys desperate trying to win that ring? No, probably not. They're mercenaries here to grab just a quick paycheck before all is said and done. Finding the right character guy is going to be a challenge for the Mariners.
Yeah, I think that's all really well said, and that's why many of them get labeled 4A players and never quite make it to the bigs and are a little bit better than the AAA, but just can't find themselves as difference makers. And by the way, Jerry DePoto and you, something in common. Both had a stomach bug yesterday. And I do wonder, as the winter meetings are eventually going to come to a close this week, if the Mariners and Jerry are going to have to apologize. Since they stole the whole show, all of Major League Baseball was focused solely on them the week before. And this whole winter meetings thing just doesn't kind of have the climax it used to have. It feels almost secondary to what the Mariners did to all of baseball.
Almost like it's no longer a big crescendo.
Yeah, exactly.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Well, Phoenix Suns owner Robert Sarver said yesterday that he'd consider moving his team to Seattle if he doesn't get $150 million in public funds for a stadium renovation. For now, Brock, I'm going to label this one as no news. I think throwing out the name Seattle, and he threw out Las Vegas as well, at this point is leveraging, and I'm not sure the Phoenix Suns are actually going to go anywhere. If this continues down the road and he doesn't end up getting the money that he wants, well, then maybe there's a conversation here. But I think, again, this is important to remember. For everybody who was concerned that they're never going to be a team, this is never going to... Well, guess what? Now that there is an actual arena getting built here, these threats from other owners actually carry some weight, and eventually one of them is going to take his team to Seattle.
Yeah, you just hope eventually you're not in this spot as being the one constantly leveraged. I was a little surprised. Danny O'Neill tweeted out last night and put a poll together, actually yesterday afternoon, asking this fan base and the Sonics fan base, what do you think? Would you want the Suns back in this market? And while I would vote absolutely not, keep Phoenix in Phoenix, keep their tradition, their history, that thing thrived for some decades down there. It was actually a really good rival of Seattle. I don't want this guy that's leveraging markets, that wants money, that wants to hold the city hostage. I don't want that kind of owner in this town anyway, but 70%, nearly 5,000 folks voting, 70% of Sonics fans in this market said, yeah, bring those Suns up here. I just want the NBA back.
Yeah, that's three things you need to know. I will just say on that one, wouldn't you prefer a local owner, though? Like, what I think the goal here is to get an ownership group in the NBA that is unhappy to sell to Oakview Group, who brings that group here, and Bonderman ends up becoming the owner of that team as well, as opposed to Robert Sarver, a guy who's a real estate magnate in Phoenix.
No, thank you.
Why? That's not who you – I don't want that. I mean, I'm not saying I'd say no, but that certainly is not the ideal situation. Let's talk to the professor.
John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Saul.
If you want to take care of him, take care of him now. And the price is only going to go up.
Every morning at 7:15.
He's too important to let go. You're not trying to
totally break everything down.
Plus, a wild card.
I am so addicted to the Beanie Babies that I've got to try to sell everything back.
It's John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Salk.
Good morning, John.
Good morning.
How you doing today?
Oh, hanging in there.
All right, good. Michael Kendrick's unfortunately placed on IR. Pete really likes this guy, huh?
He should. I mean, because you can see how tough he is, what he means. And, I mean, just look at the presence that he had in the game against Minnesota Monday night. I mean, a lot of the things that he did start cutting out some of the crossing patterns and so some took away the screen passes and that. He's a good, smart football player, and you can see how tough he was. I mean, I know at the end of the last game before the 8-game suspension, you know, he suffered a broken finger. He played through that. And then, you know, he plays a half on a broken leg. I mean, the guy is a really good football player who I think that you've got to respect.
So he will have his legal proceedings right in the month of January. I think the end of January is his next hearing. Is this a guy that you think can be in the fold for the Seahawks? And then how quickly can you determine over the long term, you know, that he goes on IR, he's going to have surgery. Is there any way to put a deal together as he works through his legal process?
Well, I think you have to wait to see what the league is going to do and what, of course, the courts are going to do, because you first have to see if he's going to be incarcerated and, you know, how long he's going to have to serve in jail, or is just going to get a sentence that he doesn't have to serve jail time. That stuff I don't know. And then, of course, the league, you know, you would have to think they can't do double jeopardy. The league can't come back and, you know, suspend him for 8 games when I think most people thought it was going to be 5 or 6.
Sure?
No.
I mean, it's not like there's some constitution in effect.
No, Roger, I mean, you never know. Right? No, that's why I think that's going to be one of the questions. Because, again, you never know how this league's going to be. But you would have to think that, you know, he's already served 8. Can he have to serve more? And, you know, you don't know, because they can do anything in the league that they tend to want to do. But, you know, I'd have to think that he's got to be a candidate to come back, because I think he likes it here. They certainly like him, and he's a good football player.
Well, it sure sounded like KJ Wright's not going to be back this weekend. Pete's saying, and he had a little walkthrough. He's been running a little bit. They'd like to put some weeks together with him and make sure that hopefully he can be available for a playoff kind of run. But what about Fluker and Baldwin? A little more optimism, I think, from the coach on those guys. There's any chance they play Sunday?
No chance for Fluker, a chance, I guess, for Baldwin, because Baldwin's kind of pretty much week to week. And again, the fact that they are all but clinched in the playoff spot, they don't have to rush him back. They can take some time to say, okay, if you need another week, you need another week. Fluker, I think, is probably going to end up playing next week against Kansas City, because it was a first degree sprain. You figure that could be 2 to 4 weeks, and this would be the second week. I don't really see any chance that Fluker plays this week. You know, they did well with Jordan Simmons, and I think he'll play, and then of course next week try to get him ready for the Sunday night game against the Chiefs.
In the meantime, sounds like the 2020 NFL draft is going to be in Vegas. How fun is that going to be?
Oh, this should be pretty fun.
Yeah.
I mean, you talk about the twists and turns of the NFL. You know, here's Tom Brady. He had the Vegas fantasy thing, and they banned him from doing that a couple years ago. Now they're going to have the draft in Las Vegas on a big 3-day celebration. So it's like twists and turns, and I guess now that there's legalized
gambling.
Well,
they're all in on this, huh? I mean, it just sure seems like the NFL said, hey, if we're going to be in, we're going to make the money, not Tony Romo. Well, we're going to make the money, and we're going to do it ourselves, and we're going to go big as we can go.
Yeah, and that's why I'm going to be interested to see if they do, how they break down, because, you know, the cap came out as 187 to 191.1, and of course part of that has to be some of the new deals that they have with casinos because of legalized gambling. And so, you know, there's more revenue coming in on that. I'd love to see the breakdown on that. But yeah, now that betting is legal, I think they're all in.
Sure, sounds like the Seahawks are going to have one of the largest amounts to spend under that cap this year, huh?
Yeah, I think it's, what, 65, 67 million bucks?
I think they're top five, according to something I saw the other day. Is that right, in terms of money? Now, where does that go? Some to Russ, I would certainly think. This is the offseason for that, right?
Well, this year or next year. I mean, you realize they probably have to put the franchise tag on Frank Clark. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Russell's going to be entering the last year of his contract, and you'd like to get something done. I don't know if it would be done early. It may be done sometime by the summer. But you would really like to take care of him and make sure that you have your quarterback locked up as long as possible.
Yeah, but it's also interesting with a CBA and what's going to be coming in just a couple short years, I think, for the players and agents as well. Like, this cap is going up. Do you want to try to get signed now, or are you going to try to wait to see, you know, what the whole new CBA could look like in just a couple of years? I think it will be fascinating. Hey, John, one thing we don't talk a lot about, you know, we talk about the market and the free agent market. Well, those players that the Seahawks let go, and obviously let Jimmy Graham walk, sign elsewhere. Sheldon Richardson walk, sign elsewhere. Brandon Marshall cut him. He goes elsewhere. They've not really been wrong on very many guys that they've let go that are just finding struggles in other markets.
Well, Sheldon's done well. I mean, he's played
3.5 sacks. I mean, he's okay. It's not like, I mean, Jaron's got 6.5 and has played far, far better than Sheldon has this season.
Yeah, but I think a lot of it with Sheldon is more, I mean, he's a 3 technique that I think, you know, is valuable on the run stopping, and I don't know about the opportunities he's going to get as far as the pass rush, but certainly Jimmy Graham has not been a $10 million tight end.
Yeah.
I mean, he's fought some injuries. In a lot of ways, he's looked very unathletic in some of the things that he's done. Brandon Marshall, I think, is pretty clear that his career is done because he goes to New Orleans. They needed receiver help. They wanted a veteran receiver, and he never even got a uniform. He never was able to get dressed. He was always inactive, so you have to figure that's done. But, yeah, I think when you start to look at the guys that they let go, a lot of them haven't really surfaced and done a lot of great things. I think Sheldon may have done the best of some of the ones that have gone, but you're right about that.
Wild card time.
Time now for the wild card.
Wild card. Mr. Professor Clayton.
Yes.
If you were going to be an officer of the law, what kind of officer would you be? A motorcycle cop, an undercover cop, or a SWAT team cop?
I think it'd be the undercover cop because, again, that requires a lot of, you know, not devious stuff, but I think a lot of just, like, thinking through things and trying to, you know, put the best plan forward. I mean, a motorcycle cop would have to be able to ride a motorcycle. Right now, I don't have any ability to do that. And certainly a SWAT team cop, that's so dangerous. I mean,
right.
That's one. So I think the undercover one because you
can danger with the undercover, by the way.
No question. But, again, it depends on, you know, which type of things are you doing. I mean, if it's going to be undercover boss in the mafia, undercover guy in the mafia. Yeah, that's going to be a little bit dangerous, but I think of the three, I think the undercover.
There's no question.
How about like a desk
cop
or something?
That would be better. Yeah, yeah.
No.
John, I see you behind a desk.
John, you've never burned bridges. You do an amazing job with information. Your due diligence is off the charts. You would be an undercover investigative. There's no question about that. You nail that, John.
Motorcycle cop kind of seems like fun.
It's probably
but you have to know how to ride a motorcycle.
I don't think I could. I think the motorcycle would be too much for me. I don't think I could do it. All right, John. Have a good day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
All right.
There's John Clayton with us every single day at 7:15.
You ever shopped at Tuesday mornings? You ever see that store Tuesday?
Have
you guys ever shopped? You've never heard of that?
Is this like...
Also, never heard of that in my life.
You've never
that?
Heard of Tuesday mornings?
No.
Oh, they've got a couple of these
Ruby
shops.
Ruby Tuesday?
No.
Yeah.
Tuesday mornings,
Ruby
for sure.
Tuesdays is one of those places like Golden Corral, right?
Chili's.
Yeah.
No, it's interesting. I was in there, and sometimes they get just kind of crazy
Where
stuff.
Where is it? What is it?
There's one in Kirkland. There's one in Bellevue. It just kind of has stuff that's like been on the market, and you know, it's kind of like a Nordstrom Rack, I think.
Okay.
Or stuff, you know, has been there in the stores, and then you know, you can
feel
find
confident
deals.
With what you're saying right now.
I do to a degree. Yeah, I've been in there a little bit because they have these amazing
it's
nutcrackers.
730 locations in the U.S.
What?
I've never heard of it.
Never heard of it.
There's like five within 20 miles.
I appreciate that. Thank you very much. I do. Don't worry about Crescendo or Crescendi, and I feel very
I sure
good about
will.
This. No, because I had real life experience with this. I was in there the other day. I get some of Molly's nutcrackers. They've got these like the original
stuff. So they have the good nutcrackers.
The really good ones. Yes, they get this like shipment in and you got to get there or they're going to be gone. Well, I was in there and they had this big box of Beanie Babies. This lady found and I was thinking about Clayton.
I was
with
addicted
his,
to them.
Yes, with his addiction. Like, gosh, he's got to find a way to get into one of those 730 Tuesday
Is
mornings.
Is it in
you
malls? Is it a store that's in malls?
No.
Never heard of it.
It looks like a strip mall kind of place.
It does.
It can be.
It's like a consignment store style thing.
Yep,
got it.
It's
like the brick and mortar version of Overstock. Is that
yes,
what we're talking
I think
about?
That's very fair.
Wayfarer got what I need.
But it was good news for that lady that found it.
Well, we got
huge
good news,
supply.
Good news, and more good news next. How about that? It's Brock and Salk.
This is Brock and Salk.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio,
here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
All right, Brock and Salk, we continue on here on 710 ESPN Seattle, 710sports.com as well. And Brock, you know every day what we do at 845. It's good news, bad news, no news. And we try to piece together some of the best, worst, and indifferent things that are happening here in the Seattle sports scene. But every now and again, every once in a while, every now and again, things get to the point where they're so wonderful, we have to take over this 730 segment and turn it into...
Good news.
Yeah!
Good news. Good news.
Woo-hoo!
Now, here's Brock and Salk.
It's time for good news, good news, good news. Things are so great right now. It's time for the best of everything. It's the good news, good news, good news.
Are we going to play about 8:10 yesterday where Jake and I broke down red right tight close C left sprint left G U corner halfback flat? And
thankfully,
he had a Charlie Weiss. Oh, it was good.
Thankfully, we're not.
Oh, okay. Piece by piece, word by word, we broke every one of those things.
Was anyone left listening by the end of that?
I don't know. It was the coolest thing.
Lydia
I've
was
ever
taking
heard.
Notes. Lydia pulled out a notepad and was taking notes and like nodding like, boy, howdy.
So cool.
Never
Let's
nodded before.
Nobody pressed the nerd alert button from the Cowherd Show.
Oh, they did.
Nerd alert.
Oh,
nerd
sure.
alert.
Yes. Well, it's more Revenge of the Nerds ogre. Nerd.
Yeah, that's what I like to hear. All right. Well, I'm never taking a sick day again. All right. Here's some good news, good news, good news. Comes from a variety of sources, including Aaron Levine, Pro Football Reference, Field Yates, some others as well.
Good
Let's
news,
start with this
news,
one.
Good news.
The Seahawks are now 16-2 in primetime home games under Pete Carroll.
That's nuts.
16-2 when they play at home in primetime. Their league best winning percentage all time on Monday Night Football is now up to 7.06. They are 24-10 all time on Monday Night Football.
Good
that's
news.
Crazy.
Yeah, that's why I would like the Chargers to beat the Chiefs tonight. I would like that to happen. They play tonight, Thursday Night Football. The Chargers and the Chiefs can't wait to see it. I'd like to see the Chargers beat them so the Seahawks do not get flexed with the Chiefs. I think the Seahawks are going to win. I think it's going to be a hard-fought game against the 49ers, but I would like to see the Chiefs and Seahawks. Is that still Sunday night primetime?
As of now.
I would like to see it remain that way because because the Seahawks are 16-2 in primetime.
But if you beat San Francisco, what do you care?
What I care is that, as I just said, the Chargers beat the Chiefs, so it still matters for them. So that game is in primetime. I don't want the Chiefs to beat the Chargers, have their end wrapped up. Seahawks have their end wrapped up.
Why not?
And not see these teams in primetime?
No.
Because I want to see that game in prime time. Are you following?
Yeah,
you
but
listening?
What's the difference? If they
I want them in prime time, what you just
winning.
Read.
But winning once percentage.
Once they beat the Niners, it doesn't matter.
Oh, you just lose to the Chiefs? Doesn't matter. Everything that you started this segment with.
Crescendoing?
Crescendo?
What are you talking
crescendoing?
About?
Crescendoing? Come on.
I don't think it matters.
Oh, really? Doesn't
no.
matter that you
good
keep
news.
Winning at the end of the year?
It's good to win, but
sure.
I don't think it matters.
Oh.
Mike prefers losses.
Oh, I guess so.
Didn't say that.
I guess
said it doesn't matter whether you win that game or not.
Oh, okay.
Good
so
news,
apathetic
good news,
to winning.
Good
okay.
news.
All right, you want another good news, good news, good news? Maybe
sure.
try not to argue with me about this one and just sit over there and either not listen
Brock,
or just
say yes.
Brock,
you understand what good news is, Brock.
Okay. This team's
only
better.
Only one of us is naturally positive,
I'm
Brock.
I'm sorry. This team's great in primetime. I want them to stay and play in primetime, but you don't care. You'd rather just have them win and just don't care about losing.
As I've told you before, Brock, the difference between me and you is that I care about championships.
Sure. Okay. Most game-winning drives in NFL history. In their first three seasons. You ready for this? Most game-winning drives in NFL history. Russell Wilson, 15. Matt Ryan, 13. Dak Prescott, 13. Pretty good place when Russell Wilson's on the field and needs a game-winning drive and needs to deliver in the final fourth quarter, and it doesn't matter that the game is 3-0 and really ugly. When the game is on the line, and I don't know why it says the first three seasons. I think that should say the last three seasons. Russell leads this league with now 15 of them over the last three.
Good news, good news, good news.
All right, let's go with this one. Since week 8 of the 2012 season, teams with 72 or fewer passing yards are 2-23.
I saw this. Yeah.
Those two wins? Yeah. By the Seahawks. One in week 16 last year, and the other one was last night. If you're looking for a team to win without throwing the ball for even 72 yards, the Seahawks are your team, Brock.
That's crazy.
Do I hit the good news drop?
Yes.
Find good a way news. To win.
There it is. Hit that thing. Hit that sucker. The Seahawks have a good enough running game, good enough defense, find ways to win, play whatever kind of game is warranted on that day. That's what you like about them.
Yep.
They can play a bunch of different styles, Kyle. Russell can throw for four touchdowns, or he can throw for none.
Okay, I'm convinced.
Good news, good news, good news.
Thank you. You got Tyler Lockett touchdown? Because Tyler Lockett this year, numbers-wise, has been the best in the history of the league in one stat.
Russell takes the snap, steps up in the pocket, looks, has time. Now he's going to throw. Tyler Lockett looks for the ball. He's got it! Touchdown! Seahawks! Malcolm Smith, the linebacker, on coverage. He can't do it. Tyler Lockett judges it perfectly. And a beautiful pass by Russ. The Seahawks lead 12-0.
Actually, since 2006 when they started to track all of this. So maybe not the whole history of the league, but I feel pretty good about his 158.3 passer rating when targeted. Tyler Lockett this season, through 14 weeks, has a 158.3. That is nearly perfect when he is targeted this year. Second all times, Jordy Nelson in 2011 at 156. Tyler Lockett in 2015, how about this, was third at 145 with all those big plays. It's Gronk, it's Gates to round out the top five. But Tyler Lockett even upping the ante from what he did in 2015. Big plays galore, unbelievable production. When targeted, no one better in the history since 2006 than Tyler Lockett.
Good news.
Let's go with this one. Seahawks are the only team in the NFL with three running backs averaging more than 4 yards per carry. It's pretty incredible. It just seems like whoever they need to come out there, and I think there's a pecking order, a pretty clear pecking order. Obviously, Chris Carson is the number one back. You look at the number of snaps taken, and he's their number one guy, and they're riding him in the most important spots in the game. But there's a real significant role for both Penny and Davis. When they get inside the 20, a lot of times they like to use Mike Davis. They like to use Davis a lot on third downs. Even now with J.D. McKissick back, they've stuck with Davis. Yeah. And at the end of the game, when ball security is a number one priority, Mike Davis sure seems to be the guy that Pete Carroll trusts. And then Penny has been their guy for some of these big plays where he just sort of breaks free and uses some of that speed. So all three guys averaging more than 4 yards per carry, that is a commitment to the run.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about that yesterday, Mike, and in baseball, how hard this thing is to turn. In basketball, you can have a decade of darkness. A year ago, the Seahawks were the worst, historically, the worst running game, running back running game in since the 60s, 50s, whenever they started to chart, they couldn't run the football. And now you're number one in this league with over 2,000 rushing yards and those three running backs getting it done. Hey, you mentioned to John Clayton about that salary cap. John spoke about the numbers going up, up, up from 187 to 190. Yeah, and you were right, Salk, as far as where these Seahawks are committed for 2019 on their cap. They're number six at $132 million, so they'll have roughly $50 to $60 million of cap space as that sits today, and we'll see if Doug Baldwin and where he's going to fit
good
on that
news.
Thing. Yeah, lots
news.
Of money to spend. Thank you.
All right, final thing, and this one doesn't quite fit in the good news category, so you might have to kill the music, but just a little bit of scary news, and we'll see whether or not Doug Baldwin's able to get back out there. But Brady Henderson posted this yesterday, and I think it's a really, really telling stat. The Seahawks with Doug Baldwin on the field versus when he's off of it is a really huge difference for Russell Wilson. And the completion percentage is similar, at least close, 68% to 61.5%. But everything else, man, the yards per attempt drops from over 8.5 to under 7. The touchdown interception ratio goes from 11.5 down to 1.5. And Russell's quarterback rating goes from 125.7 down to 85.1. I don't know whether it's all that it's not all throwing to Doug. I think it's just having an actual threat out there on the field at all times.
There's simply no debate about that. Those numbers are statistically significant.
Yes.
And it's what it does to the other receivers, the one-on-ones it creates, the speed with Doug, with which Doug plays, and the confidence and trust that Russ has in that passing game, that he's got an answer, that he always knows with 89 there can be an answer on the field. I don't think he necessarily feels that way.
Would you force him to sit for a week or two?
Force Doug to sit?
Yes, I would.
I
would 100% force Doug to sit for a week or two. You get him as healthy as he can possibly be for the last, for the Arizona game and beyond. But if he's got, try to win without him this week. If you can get that done, great. You're in the playoffs. If not, you play him the following week and or something to when you absolutely need him to try to get in. But I would do everything in my power to get a healthy.
Yeah, and the field conditions in Santa Clara don't help. That is a terrible, terrible field.
And after that, you come back for two. So I would not take any chances with losing Doug Baldwin. I would make sure he is out for this week. But I'm a notorious wuss when it comes to these things. When it comes to injuries and playing guys, I just My focus is always long-term, not short-term. They're a lot better with Doug Baldwin.
That's on championships, Salk. Your focus is always on
That's the difference between me and you.
Yeah.
You're small time.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. That's good. That's a good way to characterize it.
The difference between me and you is that you're small time. That's fine. All right, coming up next, after good news, and good news, it's time for Coors Light's Blue 42. Michael Kendricks is going to be done for the year, but is his Seahawks career over? Brock's got an answer next on Brock and Salk.
Here we go.
This is Coors Light's Blue 42.
We're going to go red, right, tight, close, sprint left, G, U corner, halfback, flat, on two. Ready, right.
Blue 42 is brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light. The mountains turn blue at 42 degrees.
Blue 42.
Now here's your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Song.
Blue 42. Blue 42.
All right, time to ask Brock some football questions. And sounds like you got like too much of this yesterday. Was there too much of this yesterday?
That's ask the text.
It sounds like a whole day of Blue 42.
7:10. I will say, you know, I read the. You haven't done it yet. At 8:15, we're going to give away some Seahawks tickets.
Yes,
I crushed that read. You want to know why?
You want to do it again?
Kyle Blue? No, not
here.
That. No.
Read it.
Well, I would, but Kyle was kind enough yesterday. Producer extraordinaire. He did an 18 font for me.
Oh, double space. So, is he big enough?
Double space.
Here, get your Ebenezers. Where are your Ebenezers? You can do the read.
Why? You know that every week this season, we're going to be giving away two tickets to every Seahawks home game. We've done it all season long. We do the Pete Carroll Show Mondays at 9:30. And later that day, we make a video of one of the highlights of our conversation with the coach. We post a link to it right at 710sports.com/win, and you become eligible to win tickets. These would be to the Chiefs game, hopefully in prime time. By watching that video, and you gain more entries by doing things like visiting on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram pages, downloading our app, etc., etc. You still have time.
Still do.
Because at 8:15 today, we're going to pick a random name of all the people who have entered the contest. We announce that name as the winner. You'll have 5 minutes to call in, redeem your prize. Watch the video at 710sports.com/win. And listen in, about a half an hour, a little bit less, for your chance to win two tickets.
I got a suggestion for this show. How about if you do all the reads?
That's not just reading. That was understanding.
That was tremendous. I'd like to bow out of doing our big reads.
It's 8 a.m. hour and 15
Kyle, from
minutes.
From now on, you just hand all these to Brock.
Hand it to me.
I'd like to bow out.
I'd like
to make a show change here 9 years in. And Brock, you do those from now on.
Then we'll get the code word contest.
That would be great.
That'd be great. Yep.
I'm 100%.
Hey.
In the 8 a.m. hour, brought to you in 11 minutes.
On me. Maybe I'll do better.
We'll be brought to you by Precor in 11 minutes.
All
Let's go. Here we go.
Question number one for Brock. Is the defensive plan that they used against Minnesota something that they will use again against San Francisco, KC, or Arizona?
I sure hope so, Mike. I sure hope that there are components of that in both their quote-unquote bandit, their six DBs on the field package, especially now minus Kendricks, a minus KJ Wright. Play to the strengths of your roster. And, you know, if you feel better about Akeem King blitzing and feel better about Mo Alexander, feel better about Delano, feel better about some of those pieces on the field, continue to be creative with it. And I'll say it again, I said it Monday night watching it, man, that bracket coverage, just doing a few more things to cross the wires of quarterbacks is always good. I don't think you can just line up and play cover three like you did with a group that was together for year after year after year after year and had a seven deep defensive line pass rush. So if you got to mix it up a little bit and mix and match, and for Nick Mullins on Sunday, you're not just lining up and he's seeing big voids and zone coverage to throw into. Yeah, I think there's components and pieces of that that are absolutely transferable to this Sunday and the Sundays that follow.
All right, question number two. Can you re-sign Michael Kendricks?
I sure hope so. I think John is right. You've got to let the legal proceedings in the month of January play themselves out. You know, for in the league, we'll probably ask both the Seahawks or anybody and just say, hey, let's let this run its course. We suspended him for 8 games. Let's see what happens through the judicial system. That is a Seahawk. I think of all the teams that I run across on the college football road, I always talk to the Ravens. Ozzie Newsome has done a phenomenal job for the last couple decades of building a clear identity. And when you talk to their scouts, they've got something very clear. It's the Ravens' way. This is a Raven. Like, you can look at guys on tape. You can be around them and say, yep, that's a Baltimore Raven. You just kind of have that feel for those guys through the years. Michael Kendricks is a Seahawk. That's a Seahawk. That guy plays with a broken finger. That guy plays with a broken bone, tibia, piece of his bone off of his knee. Like, that guy gives his heart and soul to the team that he plays for. And on top of it, he's unbelievably fast and instinctive. I hope he's a Seahawk for the next 3 years.
All right, question number three. Coming up here on the early signing period, less than a week away, Huskies looking for their next class. How's it looking?
Pretty solid, and last night got a big commitment from a four-star top 70 player in America, four-star corner out of Southern California. I got a note from one of my friends. I think eight of the last nine corners that Jimmy Lake has recruited have been four-star plus, all-American big-time players. Like, and I've said this to you before, where success breeds success, and overall as a class, you're not going to be top five. You're just not. There's nothing you're going to do in this early signing period next week. And even if you get a five-star receiver they're in for, a four-star receiver they're in on, even if they get those guys, they may climb to the top 10, 12, and that would be a high watermark. But what they can get and what they are getting are some of the best DBs on the West Coast. And if you get that, you can run Jimmy Lake's system. Like, that success is breeding success. There's no question about it. What do they call it? Death row? The death row DBs? Like, it has now become a thing. And you put guys in the NFL in the first round, in the second round. Byron Murphy could be a first rounder this year. And you start churning that success out. LSU's made a living on that. Some of these schools to say, hey, Washington did with quarterbacks for decades. You want to play in the league? Come be a starting quarterback at the University of Washington for two decades. You will play in the league. You want to play in the league? Come be a starting corner in Jimmy Lake's system, and you're going to be a first, second, third rounder. That success is absolutely breeding success at that position group.
That is today's Coors Light's Blue 42. Just an NFL football note. Do you see who's going to play tonight in that game? That game's going to be great tonight. Chargers against the Chiefs, the LA Chargers against the Chiefs. Do you see who's going to play tonight for Kansas City?
I did not.
Eric Berry.
Wow. Good.
First time since week one of 2017.
Wow. Good for him. Good for him. He has had an unbelievable battle of health concerns, both football related and obviously overcoming cancer as well. That's awesome.
And by all accounts, one of the great guys in the game, and certainly one of the great players when he's healthy. If you remember back, it was Eric Berry or Earl Thomas. They were the two top safeties, and Berry ended up getting picked before the Seahawks had a chance to get him. My guess is they would have taken him if they'd had that opportunity, and instead they end up with Earl Thomas, which certainly worked out well for both teams. But man, Eric Berry's a great
player.
He's one of my
tonight?
Favorites in the game.
You know who's not playing tonight? Spencer Ware's not playing tonight. And Stephen A. didn't know that. You know who else is not playing? Hunter Henry. There's a great clip going around of Stephen A. this morning. Like, I'm really excited about that. Spencer Ware and Teddy Bruschi's face, you know, his first take's like, what about Hunter Henry? He's been out all year, Stephen. Well, let's try again. Let's move this thing along.
Well, anyway, Eric Berry is going to play tonight. That is pretty cool after he tore his Achilles last year. All right, coming up next, Brock, get you guys on the horn. I'll open up the lines right now at 206-421-3776. And it's sort of a general question about how these Hawks have managed to get to where they are this year. There's a lot of backlash against the thought that maybe moving on from some of the veterans has actually created some of the success they've had this year. I want to know where you guys are at with that. We'll discuss next here on Brock and Salk.